All right, our last presentation for the session two today, there'll be two co-presenters regarding longwall proximity detection. Our first presenter is Todd Moore. Todd is currently manager of safety for CONSOL Energy. Todd has been employed in CONSOL since 1980 and has worked at numerous CONSOL mines as a safety director. Recently, he was the director of safety responsible for surface mines, underground mines, prep plants, coal loadouts, river loadouts, sea terminals, and all operations that involve coal mining. He's a graduate of Fairmont State University with a Bachelor's of Science in Mining Engineering. He has been a member of the West Virginia Mine Safety and Technology Task Force since its inception. He's currently the manager of safety for CONSOL Pennsylvania Operations. His presentation titled Proximity for Longwalls. So, Todd.
First of all, I want to thank everybody for sticking around this afternoon. It continues to dwindle down. I think if we had two more presenters, it would be one person and me and Mark. So appreciate you staying. Appreciate you being awake. If you want to stand up and stretch a little bit, everybody's been in here for an hour, hour and a half already, so I understand how that kind of gets old. But appreciate you staying. And this is kind of the way the coal industry is going right now. There's just a few stayers right now. And hopefully we'll manage to stay throughout all this process and work through this administration and move on in the future. But I want to talk today a little bit about proximity. Of course, a little bit about CONSOL Energy. Back in 2013, we sold off several of our mines, and now then we have about 2,500 employees on the coal side. We're operating up to eight longwalls in four different operations. Basically, we are in two locations. We're in the Pennsylvania operations, and we're in the Virginia operations. With only that amount of mines, you can still see that last year we did about 34 million ton. So we may be small, but we're pretty powerful, and we have a lot of tons to mine. So our market right now is both steam and metallurgical, and it goes to the United States, Europe, Asia, and South America. A few years ago, our management group decided that the way that we'd been looking at our safety side of things wasn't exactly the way we should be doing. Every year we'd look at each other and we'd kind of shake out and come up with new numbers for the next year. And usually what was accepted was about 10% less accidents than we had the year before. And that really was a foolish thing to be doing. And we changed, and the way that we started doing it is we decided that every accident we had was an exception to what we wanted to happen. And so at that time we came up with this hierarchy, with safety and compliance being our number one and number two values, and that's the way we position ourselves throughout everything we do at CONSOL. And that's one of the reasons we're chasing after proximity as hard as we are, because of safety and compliance, and then continuous improvement being that base for all of that. If you get those three things in line, then of course cost and production will come around, and that's our philosophy, and that's the way we live. Some of the things that we've identified that's really caused us problems are red zones and stored energy. The things with red zones and storage energy, one of the things that we do is each accident we have, we classify somehow to determine its fatal potential, 0 through 5. And the ones that had the most fatal potential usually are from stored energy and from red zones. Okay, most of our most serious accidents, that's what they involve, is those two things. So we try to focus on those, but in our focusing on those, we determine that a lot of what happens to us is our behavior. Okay, and so a couple years ago, we started looking at our behavior-based safety, because we were determining that, you know, as much as we did to improve the safety of our miners, we still had our miners making foolish choices, I guess would be the proper thing to say there. And so we've started working on changing everyone's behavior so that they don't do foolish things and they do the proper thing this every time, whether there's management beside them or whether there's not. Some of the things that we started working on, or we've worked on, I've worked on personally over the years, that have been pre-law, like proximity is right now. course, we had the refuse alternatives. You either love them or you hate them, but they're here to stay. Proximity detection on the miners and working at it on our mobile equipment. SCSR improvements, trying to come up with a hood rather than a mouthpiece so that our miners have a better means for escape than what they currently have. The integrated miner safety helmet, which is something that's a project going on right now, trying to get a helmet that our miners are more accepted to and will perhaps one day be worn by all miners underground. Through the Earth Communications, that's one of my own personal favorites. After SEGO, I was in the command center at SEGO whenever we thought we'd saved all those people's lives, and it turned out we'd only save one. If we'd have had Through the Earth Communications at that time, we would have saved everybody's life but one guy at SEGO. So that's kind of a personal thing to me. The drone deployment, we're just now currently working on that. I was sitting here a little while ago and I saw a drone flying around out there. I don't know who's got that, but somebody's flying one around here. We flew one underground the other day, the first time, to my knowledge, one's ever been flew underground. Looking forward to working on that project. Remote control dozer, once again, that's with CAT. And working with CAT, worked with CAT several years ago on a remote control dozer, the first one that they ever built, I think. That kind of got shelved for us, but CAT continued on with that, and we're looking to move on with that. And then, of course, proximity detection on longwalls. And that's where we're going to talk about here today. Now, this project's been going on now for a few years, and I want to thank CAT for getting involved with this and seeing the necessity for what we're doing here. The reason that proximity... Well, I'll get to that here in a couple of minutes. But right now on a longwall face, a couple of things that came about when we just started the project was we looked at how longwalls were being operated, and we saw that with the new LED light technology, we could start doing something we could never do before, and that was flash the light on the shield that the guy was in front of a different color. Okay, so just imagine that you're on a longwall face, the shield that you're under is getting ready to move, and now it starts flashing red. Okay, something we could never do before, and we were able to do that now. And so our faces were working on doing that so that it warns the guy and he can, or the gal, and they can get out of the road. The second thing that we've done there is we've moved adjacent control so that whenever you're pulling a shield, you have to be at least two shields away to move the shield that you're wanting to move, because we had lots of rocks falling from between the shields. We had a lot of dust issues and things with, you know, being too close to it. So we moved it to not the adjacent shield, but two shields away. Two things that's really enhanced safety already just as we started to work on this project. Those were a couple of thoughts that came about. Right now, proximity is being ran on place change miners, shuttle cars, ram cars, coal haulers, on our miner section scoops, specifically on our miner section scoops, not our longwall scoops, because we have issues with proximity on longwall scoops on longwall moves, but that's where we're running them currently. Of course, for those of you who don't know about proximity is just a system that allows the miner to wear a pad that is detected by the proximity system, and then it won't allow the equipment to move in a fashion that would crush that guy or pin him or hurt him in any fashion. That's what proximity is designed to do, and that's what this system does. A little timeline for proximity. Everybody kind of says, oh, proximity is something new. Well, proximity is not new. Proximity, we started looking at clear back in 98. Okay? You can see the things that move through. You guys can read, so I'll not read that to you. Consol, we really started looking at it probably in 2009. We did some testing early on down in Virginia at one of our mines, but the system that we ran down there only protected one guy and only on one side of the miner. But we've been chasing after this for quite a while. Of course, you know the new regulations that are out for miners came about, first of all, from the state of West Virginia, which is a little bit more aggressive than the MSHA requirement. And then in that following, or in that same year, the state of Virginia came out with their own policy on proximity for miners. And then, of course, the federal guideline that came out here just recently that we're all having to comply with on place change miners. Some of the machinery that proximity is currently being operated on, and you notice that longwall shields are not on the list yet, okay? But that's one of the things that we think we can make happen. I think that CAT may have ran one in another country for a little period of time, but currently I don't think there's any running here in the United States, but I'll let Mark talk about all that. Just a little oversight of, you know, how they've become approved. And now then I can add Caterpillar. I guess they were approved a couple weeks ago with their shield system through the MSHA process, which, let me tell you, that is a long, drawn-out process. So here's to you, Cat, for getting that done. It's not easy. Key features, you can see the consistent performance, configurable fields. They never change shape. Detect a fallen miner. Now, I think that's where, and we'll talk about that here in a minute, I think that's where it really comes into play for longwall shields. I've been studying proximity, and I've been studying accidents that have involved crushing minor accidents now for several years, and read through every one that's been since 1983. And it seems that they all come down to these two ways right here that people get crushed, okay? Either unanticipated movement of the machine, okay? So you either got a guy that's standing somewhere and he doesn't think it's going to move right and it does, or he doesn't think it's going to move at all and it does, or the operator makes it move somehow, okay? Or the operator or the victim didn't see each other. So you're around the curtain, you're around the corner, you're underneath, you're somewhere that you shouldn't be, or however that is. Those are the two basic ways that everybody that I have studied over the years has basically been, you know, hurt with a device that proximity could have stopped. Now, this is probably the most important slide right here of every slide in my presentation. This is probably a little dated, okay, but the number of, this was back when Dave Sheridan was still at MSHA, and he's been going now since the first of the year, I guess. Time flies. But at that time, there was 529 systems in the U.S., okay, that were in operation. And like I say, I'm sure that number's higher now, a good bit higher. But the total number of fatalities involved in a proximity equipped piece of equipment is zero since its inception. So that's one to keep in your mind. I mean, you know, if there's some technology out there that will allow you to get to zero, proximity may very well be that one, okay? With that, once again, I'm going to turn this over to Mark. I want to thank everybody for staying around. I want to thank Kat particularly for working on this project and allowing me to work on this project as well, and I look forward to putting one underground in some of our mines so that we can look at the innovation and try to work through all the issues and make it work, which I know we can. So, Mark. Oh, I'm running off of that thing.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Todd. If you have any questions for either of them, we'll just save them for after Mark's done. So our next presenter is Mr. Mark Jones. Mark is an electrical engineer with Caterpillar who specializes in digital electronic design and programming. He completed his Bachelor's of Engineering in Computer Engineering at Geneva College in Beaver Falls, PA. And Mark has worked with the longwall automation team at CAT Global Mining in Houston, PA for the past 5 years. So, Mark?
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us. Let's see if this monitor catches up with us. There we go. That's good. Again, my name is Mark Jones. I work for Caterpillar. I've been working for Caterpillar for about 5 years now. I'm here today. It's my honor to talk to you about personnel proximity detection. It's an especially distinct honor because, as my complexion will attest, they seldom let me out of my dungeon cubicle. But I'm excited here to talk to you about this technology that I've worked on for about 2 years. So what's the agenda for today? Well, we're going to be covering proximity detection as risk mitigation. Theoretically, where does this fit in? Basic parts of a robust PPD system. What's a good PPD system designed like? Why do we need this for longwall? And what are our goals if we're going to put this on a longwall? The specifications of and behavior of the particular project that I've been working on. I'll do a brief overview of that. And then lastly, I'm going to take you on a tour, a virtual tour through a mine, where you're going to be my visitor and I'm going to be the miner. So firstly, let's cover some theory. I'm sure many of you are well acquainted with this concept of the hierarchy of controls. It's a well-accepted concept that, starting at the top here, we have the most effective means of hazard mitigation, and that's elimination. Now, am I going to get a laser pointer? Not so visible. At any rate, elimination. we can't eliminate moving shields underground. They've got to move. We can't substitute them, really. We do our best effort to make these machines as safe as possible. But when it comes down to it, machine has to move. And increasingly, it does so in an automated fashion. And people cannot always anticipate if they haven't been trained or they weren't paying attention, then they are not going to understand when that's happening. So we need something else. And that's where we come in with PPD, personnel proximity detection. Under engineering controls, we can design something that's going to intervene whenever human error would otherwise cause an accident. A well-designed PPD system is not only going to be doing engineering controls, it's also going to be able to enforce administrative controls. Somebody sitting on the surface or anywhere across the internet should be able to view their operation and see how people are using their PPD system. And, of course, ever important is PPE. But as we can see, as provided by NIOSH here, the most effective means, these two at the top. We've done everything we can. Engineering controls, that's where PPD is going to fall in. Most effective to least. So, let me go over some of these hypotheticals that almost probably would not ever work on a longwall. But they're options. Contact strips, pressure-sensitive mats. You could conceivably put these things on tows or rails, but you need to train people how to use these sort of things. They're going to be subject to wear. You don't want them. And ultimately, you can't detect who is using them. Which individual is where on the face? Motion sensors, cameras. Despite my best efforts, I have not been able to get the NSA to surrender their facial recognition technology, so we're not able to identify people on the face. And the performance can be sporadic. Cameras are great for monitoring operation. But for tracking individuals, knowing exactly, precisely where they are, not the best. Light barriers and curtains, not great for moving equipment. And again, we can't identify individuals. All these things suffer from the same common failure, and that is the inability to, and I want to drill this in, to be able to identify what individuals are where, who's doing what on your longwall. So, obviously, we turn to radio frequencies, different fields. We're all familiar with these things in our lives. All your phones are equipped with Bluetooth these days. Well, this is basically what we're operating with. We have PPD tags. This is a battery-operated device. It's going to sit on your belt or your helmet. The PPD reader, this sits up in the leg pocket of the shield, one for every shield. And then we have the controller network that is making all of the decisions for the automated network in your longwall, when to move equipment. So we can integrate all of these things. We can get PPD done on the longwall. But why? Why are we going to do this? Well, increasingly, as covered by Todd, is safety is an increasing importance. We want to bring that number down to zero. We want to know the location of all personnel on our longwall. We want to know if John has gone to do the job and if he's doing it properly, if he's using the right features on the longwall. So we want to ultimately mitigate the risk of hazardous movement, or mitigate that hazard. And it's going to be able to improve training by tracking individuals, what behavior they are taking on the longwall. We can correct these things. And, of course, ever-present, what could be in the pipeline, is the enforcement of this. So you want to start thinking about proximity for your longwall. All right, so again, why? Why are we doing this? Well, any well-designed controller network on your longwall is going to have safety features. We covered this in the hierarchy of controls. Safety features require training of individuals, changing behavior. And we know that changing behavior of humans is a tough thing to do. So our step one, our first gate is to implement safety features. You can see here we have umbrella locks, maintenance locks, quick stops, shield lockouts, pressure removal. You can do all of those things. Do you know if your employees are actually using them? The second thing that we can use to try to make people more aware of their environment is flashing lights. As Todd covered, flashing lights and the most obnoxious beepers you'll ever hear, but they get people's attention. But human beings, we get conditioned to these things. We're conditioned. I know I started off with an alarm clock that was birds chirping, waking me up in the morning, but now I have to blast heavy metal just to get myself up. You get conditioned to sounds. And lastly, the third defense that we can take is an engineering control. We can use proximity. And this is going to intervene when otherwise human error, human incompetence, or just neglect of your surroundings could result in a terrible accident. So, I've talked about some of the characteristics, but what are the goals? What are the goals of PPD on longwall? Well, we want a nuisance-free operation. Obviously, we can't have this thing stopping production every other minute. That would be unacceptable. We can't compromise safety on the same token. We want to be able to integrate a proximity system into current health monitoring and administrative tools that are available both on the surface and underground. The system should be able to self-correct. It's got to monitor its own health, and you have to be able to be fault-tolerant. A cable breaking or whatever else, you have to be able to have a robust system that's not going to require so much maintenance, it's not worth having. And you have to restrict the use of equipment to those that are trained to do so. A good system should be able to do this. So let's get into the specifics of the product I've been working on. This is PPD, two main components, the PPD tag and the PPD reader. Battery life up to 1.5 to 2 years. And both are intrinsically safe devices, and both equip two different wireless protocols, one low-frequency protocol and one higher-frequency protocol that is akin to Bluetooth that's on your phone. Here's Justin Feiler. You can see him wearing the belt tag, and we have numerous variations of the tag. You can get a loop or belt, a bolt, and we also have a visitor's tag. It's distinctly red, so that an individual wearing this, you're going to be able to identify that individual should not be operating equipment because he's just a visitor. He's just a contractor at this mine. There's no way that he should be having his hands up on buttons and moving things if he hasn't been trained to do it. And we're also able to determine that electronically. So what are the capabilities of this tag? Well, a tag and a PPD reader, a low-frequency field is put out, and we can detect a tag up to 3 meters away, a radius of 3 meters around the reader. These things need to be customized, though, for the long one. You can't have a 3-meter radius bubble on one shield. That would be far too imprecise of a system. You got to narrow that down, and you have to increase the frequency at which you put these pulses out so that we can detect miners reliably and quickly. And we need to be able to monitor, like I mentioned previously, we need to be able to monitor the health of such a system. The battery life, diagnostics, these are all tools that should be available to administrative personnel on the surface. And to each individual miner to take responsibility for his battery life, for the function of his tag. But it needs to be done in a way that's not a nuisance, and I'll show you that here in a second. So let's get a little bit into the more technical side. I hope none of you gloss over here. But how does this work? How does the data transaction work? What's this magic? Well, first, the controller network, the PMCR network in this case, is going to communicate with the transmitter, the reader. And it says, hey, I need you to put out a low-frequency field, and I need you to sniff the air in the area of the bubble around me to tell me if there are any PPD tags out there, anyone out there. So it transmits a shield number, and it's a high-frequency channel to respond back on. The tag wakes up from a low-power state. It says, okay, I'm ready to transmit. I'm definitely here. Here's my tag ID. Here's the low-frequency signal strength at which I detected from you. And here's my role. I'm a visitor. I'm a miner. I'm a foreman. I'm CAT service. I'm a service personnel or an engineer. So you can see how this can start to be useful for a control system so that we can distinguish between different types of people. After that, the PPD reader communicates this information back to the control network. The control network says, ah, I see we have a person on the shield. There is no way that I'm going to be doing automated movement, conveyor pullbacks, auto sequences, whatever it may be, while that individual is in the shield. So you probably thought to yourself, I turn my microwave on at home, and it kills my Wi-Fi. What's up with that? How are you going to get this thing to work on the longwall? Mentioned previously by the first presenter, you've got variable frequency drives, all sorts of different things. So you have to address noise. So one way that we prevent fields from stepping over one another is to do time multiplexing. So a little animation here will show you 1, 3, and 5 will put out their low-frequency fields. 2, 4, and 6 put out their fields. 1, 3, and 5 again. This happens rapidly, tens of times per second. And the tag says, I was detected in not one but two different shields. I was detected at 80% in field 3. I was detected at 30% in field 4. So if you want to use the word triangulate, you could say, I must be in shield 3. Shield 3 will not move. So let's go on a tour. Let's actually see how this works underground. When you start as my visitor, I'm going to take you to the safety office or the longwall office, and they're going to assign a tag to you. In this case, a visitor's tag. And we can see that all employees have been configured. Do this quickly with a different minor, visitor, CAD administration, or foreman status directly programmed into their tag. It's easy to just drag that name over, assign it to an unassigned tag that's sitting right on the desk there. It takes less than a second. You're done. You're ready to go underground with your tag. Nobody's going to forget to take it underground when it takes half a second to do it. After that, you get to the entry area, the elevator. You're going to see a screen. You walk up to it. At the elevator, we have three individuals in the aforementioned 3-meter radius around a PPD reader and a computer that's attached to this screen. And we can see the status, the health status of my tag. We need to guarantee that if somebody's going underground, they're not doing so with equipment that's not functional. So the visitor, I've just given you a brand new tag. Your battery life is at 100%. You have this green transmitter here that shows, yep, your tag is healthy. It's transmitting and responding perfectly well. I work at this mine. Mark Jones, there's my tag ID, my employee ID. My battery life is at 68%, still perfectly acceptable. It's going to work for a good time more. And I have the role of a miner. The person below me, John Doe, he's been a little bit negligent. He has service requested on his tag because his battery life is falling to an unacceptable level. Or he needs to go have a diagnostic test performed on it to make sure it's still functioning at optimal performance. So let's head underground. But before we do so, I just want to mention that all this information, you should be able to share this with all the software that you have on the surface. PPD shouldn't just be one OEM. You should be able to share this sort of thing with different training systems, one of which Caterpillar has itself, and other training systems and other proximity systems. This needs to be made available. So here's the data flow of that. On the surface, you're going to have this in the entry area, a PPD reader. All the tags in the area are going to report their health and their battery strength. And then we have a common database that sits on servers on the surface and the mine elevator entry area computer. Back in the safety office, you're going to have the maintenance software that I first showed you and any third-party software that needs to have access to this PPD information should you choose to do so. And you can see this database is going to log the health of your tags. You're going to be able to see that John Doe has had this dead tag for 2 weeks. And you're going to be able to tap him on the shoulder and say, why are you working underground with equipment that is not up to snuff? Okay. You get to the VCU, the health monitoring system on a modern longwall. Here we have software that is able to tell us what parts of the longwall are operating as we expect, the shear movement speed, all that fancy stuff. You're familiar with this sort of thing. But now we can also see what personnel are where on the longwall. And this software is available to use anywhere across the internet if you have the right access to it. So if you want to be an administrative controller of your mine to make sure people are using the safety features and the PPD as they should be, you can hover your mouse over the PPD tag that's sitting on shield 123 and say John Doe is in fact working on that piece of equipment I sent him down to fix, to repair. So let's walk onto the longwall. But before we do that, I have one more, admittedly, probably the most technical thing I'm going to cover today. And this is the concept of tag tracking. We have the battery station on the surface. We know that people have healthy tags before they go underground, but things happen. We need to make sure that a tag at all times, should you choose to enable this feature, a tag cannot disappear for more than 5 seconds. It would be unacceptable if a tag was to malfunction or something was to malfunction on the face and we've completely lost track of a miner or it's been crushed or damaged. So to that end, you have to introduce a concept of registration and deregistration so that the system can distinguish between legitimate, intentional exits and losses of tags from the longwall from illegitimate. And so what you do is for registration, you don't want people to have to go through a process. We don't want this to be a nuisance. As I mentioned, for registration, somebody walks onto the longwall, automatically registered. If you're lost, that's a problem. For deregistration, you have to make this as simple as possible without being a nuisance. You add a button on the third shield in from either gate You can kick, punch, otherwise hit this button, and the system is going to know the tag that was in this area. You have a minute to get out of this longwall. It's a legitimate exit, and it's entirely okay for you to do so. Otherwise, this system would not guarantee that a lost tag was a legitimate one. So this is a good feature to use. And you can see that I added, we added a buffer zone. So if you're walking onto the longwall, if you're walking up to but not necessarily onto the longwall, you don't want to be bothered with the nuisance of having to use a registration deregistration thing. That would be a pain. So while you are still protected if you're in that area, if you're just walking tools up around the cross frame, doing your day-to-day job, but not on but around the longwall, you don't have to be bothered by the one thing you need to know about the PPD system. So, before you go onto the face, you say, Mark, how does this actually protect me? I need to know how this thing on my device is protecting me from movement, or you, if you're distracted. And the way it does this is when you're detected in a shield, we provide an additional blanket of protection, one shield in each direction, so that if you're moving at a good clip, we know that no equipment should be operating in front or behind you. Be that conveyor pullback, should you elect to use that option, and certainly automated sequences, ASQs. Now, as I mentioned previously, a well-designed, robust system can't just cut pressure to the whole face whenever we have somebody in the area of a shield that's moving equipment. You can't do that every time. You can only do that in really extreme circumstances. So if a shield is trying to move, if we sequence something to start moving automatically or triggered by personnel, we need to give that person 10 seconds to get out of the way. You need a cue. You need to say, I'm trying to move. I'm being as loud as possible with these beepers, and I am being as obnoxious as possible with these lights. Hopefully you're not conditioned to these things, which humans can be. But if for some reason you were not seeing or hearing those warnings, I'm not going to move. I'm going to stop. I'm going to send a message that somebody has totally ignored the signs around them that equipment was moving, or they failed to use a safety feature that was there to prevent this from even starting. Furthermore, if somebody walks into a piece of equipment that is already moving, say they weren't around for the warnings, they were really booking it, they were distracted, you got to stop that equipment quickly, and we can do so in under 300 milliseconds. We can just stop that equipment, it can set back up to the roof, and we're good to go. So here we have two workers on the longwall. This is, of course, just for purpose of demonstration. We would not have continually illuminated red lights. But you can see that I am detected by the shield and protected by the one next to me, and my coworker behind me is also protected, the red light indicating that there is personnel in the shield. So consider this scenario. You're working with somebody who likes to get the job done in the fastest way possible, and they have muscle memory. This guy, his whole job is to walk down the face, press two buttons, and get equipment to move. You're my visitor. But I've been doing this job for 20 years. I don't need you to be in my way. I don't even know you're there. I press two buttons. That shield is going to start moving in 3 seconds. Maybe this person wasn't aware that the lights and the beeping meant movement somehow. Or maybe this person was injured. They got stuck. Boots are wedged under the toes. Whatever scenario you could imagine. Hold up. This part needs to be replaced, he says. I'm trying to move those shields. Well, what happens if this conversation never occurs? We're talking about a loud, distracting environment with slip hazards, trip hazards, where people can be unconscious or, like any human being, zone out. So if this conversation didn't happen, that coworker on the right or that visitor on the right could be subject to movement that he had no clue was going to happen. And as Todd mentioned, people that go onto longwalls don't necessarily understand what longwalls are doing. They don't always know when the shields are going to be moving. One last thing before I close this up. You can see I mentioned the red visitor tag earlier, and this is an individual wearing one on his belt. If a visitor or a contractor who's bold enough to go and try to operate your equipment, you don't want him to do that if he hasn't been trained. So a robust PPD system needs to be able to enforce administrative controls. And that's what this is going to do. Our PMCR network is going to say, I see that you just have the role of a visitor. Beep, beep, beep. No way I'm letting you press these keys that are unrelated to what you're here to do. Okay? If it's not a stop, emergency stop button, if it's not a lockout button, if it's not a safety feature, why is that guy using that piece of equipment? So in summary, I've taken you from the surface where we've commissioned a tag, a visitor's tag. I've taken you to the elevator entry area where we check to see that you're tagged before you even went underground, that you're going to be protected by a proximity system. I take you down to the VCU box, and you can see the administrative controls that are available to a well-designed PPD system. You can see where each individual is on the face just with your mouse. You can see what personnel are where. And then finally, we walked onto the face, and the one thing you need to know for the most robust system you could have is kicking that button on the way out at the end of your shift. So with that, I want to thank you guys for paying attention and staying this late in downtown Pittsburgh, a hazard I wouldn't wish on anybody. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Are there any questions for either Todd or Mark regarding the long wall proximity? Thank you. Anybody else? All right, thanks a lot. That will conclude session two today. Tomorrow's session will start at 9 a.m., long wall operation design and management. So thank you for coming. We'll see you tomorrow.